Hey, y'all, if you enjoy watching your podcast, which seems kind of weird, watching your podcast, but some people really enjoy that. So we have a YouTube channel. You can find it at Heather Parady, P-A-R-A-D-Y. It's also linked up in the show notes. You can hit subscribe. And several of these interviews are actually in person, so you can watch that. Again, that is at Heather Parady on YouTube. Adam Rose is an actor, filmmaker, and content creator, famously known for his blue cardigan. Growing up in the entertainment industry, Adam has a passion for storytelling and connecting with folks on camera. Over the pandemic, one of his videos absolutely went viral, and Adam has been able to leverage that one success into building multiple channels that reach millions of people. And this isn't just a hobby for him. What you may not know is Adam is writing, he has sold a pilot, a movie, all while putting out content with hundreds of millions of views. So I had him on the show today to talk about how in the world he's able to navigate the conventional entertainment industry while being an independent content creator, how he takes an idea from spark to execution, and why he believes that creativity requires not a blue cardigan, but speed.
I stopped feeling like I had sort of boxed myself in and all of a sudden felt more like I was standing on top of a box. I think creative things require speed.
Tell me more. Why do creative things require speed? I like that.
Because of momentum.
It's something you're deeply questioning right now.
How's it going to end?
Like the world?
Maybe.
People already know who you are. And of course, people already know who you are. It's Adam Rose. You've seen him on the internet. I promise you, you've seen this man on the internet. I've been following you since, you know, pandemic days, dude.
Yeah.
Pandemic days, the good old days. Probably shouldn't say that.
Well, to some.
I'm really glad you came on. Obviously, folks know you as a content creator.
Yeah.
But what I've learned about you is you've been in the game since you were a kid. And when I say a game, entertainment, getting in front of the camera, this is not new to you. I think it was 8 years old you started off. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah, I started acting when I was 8 in New York City. And I guess was a bit of a performer before then, even in kindergarten and doing school plays and stuff like that. And then, yeah, started doing it professionally when I was 8 years old.
So, yeah, you were putting out YouTube videos, too, even before TikTok, and kind of started a vlogging piece. I went down a little bit of a rabbit hole with that and watching it, and it was kind of good, man. Like, you got the drone life going.
Yeah.
Professional shit. So tell me about that.
Yeah, I had the thought to dabble in the social media space. And then at the time, Casey Neistat was like all of social media.
I still think it's cool as crap.
Oh, he's the best. He's the best. Mm-hmm. He's so cool, so talented, so creative, and at the time was the biggest thing on the internet. And so that to me was like, I didn't know anything else. So I saw his videos and I was like, okay, let me try doing that. And so you'll see if you watch my old vlogs, they're like total Casey Neistat ripoffs. But it was great for me because it gave me a format and forced me to learn how to use a camera, how to edit, how to shoot, how to talk to the camera, how to find music, how to fly a drone, how to do all of these things. And they all contributed to my success later on, I feel like.
Yeah. What I'm so curious about as a creator who is in the entertainment industry.
Yeah.
Because you have the conventional path, then you have the unconventional path, right?
Yeah.
And it seems as though you're kind of blending the two at this stage in your career. You're still working in the industry, but also too, my God, what you've done in a few years with your socials. Like, I just didn't even watch you on Instagram this past year, dude. It's just like...
Yeah, the past 6 months especially has been particularly, I don't know, just crazy.
It's cool. I'm so happy. I'm so happy for you. You deserve it.
Thank you.
But I've been thinking about, like, as a creator, because, you know, you got those, all the advice to get an agent, audition the hell out of everything, go to every networking event, do all that stuff. But then also I see folks like you and kind of taking things into your own hands. And then you kind of go the opposite end with the creators and they're like, F the industry, you know, like burn the bridges, do your own thing. I'm just curious your perception as somebody who loves acting. You want to be in front of the camera. you enjoy that side of things, but you're also seeing a lot of success as a creator.
Yeah.
How do you blend those worlds? What do you think?
Honestly, there's not a lot of people to look at as a model for blending those two worlds. There's a few, but there's not a lot. And so I think the entertainment industry as a whole, and that encompasses the traditional space and the digital space, is still figuring out how to vibe together, how to, you know, because I think it's very clear that these worlds are merging. And it's really about what's that going to look like as that blur, you know, kind of seeps into the rest of it. And I hope to be at the forefront of that because I'm in a unique position where I grew my audience independent of any traditional work that I've done on TV and film. And then at the same time, you know, have been working as an actor for the last 25 years and done over 30 television shows. So it's like, there's just not too many people in the position that I'm in to really figure out a way how to blend these worlds and know how to operate in both spaces.
How does the industry feel about creators, like people specifically like you who, you know, have the IMDb and you have some credits and all that stuff? Is that kind of frowned upon?
I don't think it's frowned upon. And if it is frowned upon, it's sort of like quietly frowned upon because I think even those people know the value that it brings. And they know that it's sort of like a necessary part of the industry now. But then beyond that, I think there's people in two camps. There's people who embrace it and understand that it's inevitable, this sort of, you know, blending of worlds. And then there are the people who see it as a threat, which I also understand because it has, you know, usurped a fair amount of attention from the traditional space in Hollywood. So I understand why it can feel threatening. But I mean, that's why I started social media in the first place. I was not even on social media, you know, for the better part of my acting career. Obviously, it wasn't even a thing. And then it wasn't until, you know, I lost a couple acting gigs to people who had huge followings on social media that I was like, you know, I could have done what a lot of other actors did at that time, which was just go, these, you know, douchebags or whatever, like, I'm not going to do whatever they're like, that's ridiculous. Like, my work will speak for itself. My talent will speak for itself. And I just didn't feel that way. I just was like, you know what? If that's what people are paying attention to, I know I've got the goods, you know, as far as, you know, my acting ability or my writing or whatever. So if that's what people are paying attention to, well, I can do that better than those guys can do it. And that's what got me started. Now, at the time, I couldn't do it better than those guys. I quickly learned that, you know, this was a skill. This was a craft that you had to learn, short form video, whether that be vlogs that are 10 minutes or as time went on, you know, the videos got shorter. And then all of a sudden, I mean, with respect to Vine, obviously, there were the 6-second videos. And then, you know, we've sort of landed around the like 15 to minute long video short form content range. And that's a craft. And it took me a long time to learn. But I just realized at that point that I had to pursue both paths at the same time. And I knew that they would eventually merge.
I think it's brilliant.
Hey, thanks.
I do. Especially in this weird time that we're in, it can't be an either or, it's a yes and. And I think that's in life in general.
Yeah. 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 I think it's a hindsight 2020 kind of thing, because at the time, the majority of the people who I interacted with or who would see me, you know, filming myself or doing whatever, they thought I was nuts. They thought it was sort of a fool's errand.
Don't they all throughout history, man? That is history. I'm curious. Yeah. I don't have millions of followers yet.
Yeah.
But I'm curious, now you're on the other side of it.
Yeah.
You've worked your ass off. You're seeing the fruit of it, dude. Like, wow. Is it all that it's cracked up to be? Does it actually help your career? Would you do it all over again?
Oh, would for sure do it all over again. Does it help my career as an actor, you mean?
Yeah.
Remains to be seen.
Yeah.
I don't think it can hurt. I think having an audience is incredibly valuable. We've obviously seen, you know, influencers who can't act their way out of a paper bag get acting roles. So we know it can help in that respect, but it remains to be seen, you know, how that bridge can be crossed in, again, from this unique position of having a history in both worlds. You know, we've seen people cross from one place to another, and we can kind of tell they're green. You know, now when I do a TV show, the studio or the network might ask me to post about it on social media. So I know I'm providing some value that goes beyond just me as an actor. So yeah, you know, I think it's also hard to say because since all this has happened over the last, whatever it is, 3 or 4 years, we were in the pandemic where everything shut down. And then we were on strike. And so there has been like barely a few months of actual work in Hollywood during the time that I've been growing and building this audience.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. But I think you said it perfectly earlier about it teaches you how to create, and you're a writer. And when I heard that you were, I was like, yes, let's talk, man. I've been digging into creative process. I suck, but I'm working on it. I'm very, very green. But I'm curious, what kind of stuff are you writing right now? You've built this audience, you have a lot of experience. Now that you kind of have an open field, dude, what's the stuff you're making?
So I've been writing since I was a kid, basically. As soon as I saw Good Will Hunting, when I found out that
Matt and Ben watched that.
Oh yeah, when I was like 12 or something.
Oh,
I think.
Wow. That's a cool mom.
I got to watch whatever I wanted. She didn't really pay attention to what I was watching. And I was like, oh, look, here are two actors who wrote themselves roles. And, you know, I was already auditioning and working in theater and doing all this stuff and already saw the value of like creating your own work. And so I started writing on like, you know, pads of paper, making like scripts, just like very simple little scenes and things like that. And I probably had dreams of turning them into movies. But that kept going. And then I made a short film in, I think it was 2012, did all the film festivals. I thought that was going to be like the, you know, the start of my feature film career and directing career. And it was not. I was able to get a bunch of meetings because the short film was pretty successful and we won some awards. But I just started writing, and then I got a writing partner, and then we started writing, and then we sold our first pilot to Warner Brothers, which was a huge deal. And then we started to, that show never got made. And then we were developing other shows with other companies. And again, like just, you know, taking a bunch of swings at the bat and seeing what stuck, and we would get a little closer, or, you know, and then we would fail, and then we would get a little closer. And then that process has continued. Right before the strike, I made like a trailer, like I shot and directed and cut together this trailer for a movie idea that I had, and thought maybe if I make something visual, I'll be able to get the point across better than like a 90-page script. Made that, started getting sent around, and we sold that before the strike. And then since the strike, we've been writing and working on it. And the idea is to make that this year.
Is that normal where somebody, instead of writing the full script, will do a trailer instead and pitch that?
I wouldn't say it's normal, but the use of what they call like sizzle reels have become really popular. But usually they don't go and shoot the thing themselves. They usually like take clips from other movies and kind of cut it together and maybe put some voiceover over it to kind of make it seem like the project that they've come up with, even though they're kind of Frankensteining a bunch of other projects together to like give the tone and get people to understand what it is. But because I cut my teeth learning how to shoot, learning how to edit, learning how to, you know, make things happen on a very small scale, but still make them feel big, I said, you know what, let's just shoot this thing. And I picked different moments from the movie that I thought would end up in the trailer. And we just shot those little moments and cut it together. And it came out great and got the movie sold.
Congrats. That's huge.
Thank you.
That's so badass. That's so cool.
Thank you.
Was the script completed on your end before you made this? No.
No, the pitch was completed.
Okay.
You know, we had an entire outline ready to go, but we were looking to sell the idea and get paid to write it.
That's so cool. I'm curious, is that your preferred process? Are you kind of I love the quote, action creates clarity. You kind of have to throw up something on a board to figure out what it is. Or was that just kind of an interesting way to stand out to pitch your idea? What made you decide to do it that way?
Again, I think anytime you can use the edge that you have over other people, you should use it, right? So I had the skills to make something like this because I knew how to shoot and I knew how to edit and I knew I could act in it. And not every writer who's trying to sell a movie has the ability to throw all of that together. Mm-hmm. So in my mind, I'm like, let me use those skills that I have to my advantage and maybe drown out some of the other noise, because obviously there's a million people trying to sell a movie. So how can you stand out in some way and show people instead of telling them?
Since you're a creator, do you wrestle with knowing whether to pitch something in the traditional way or just freaking make it yourself?
It depends what it is.
Okay.
Right? There are certain projects where you're like, oh, we can just do this ourselves. Like, let's just do that. And then there's other things that require the support of the traditional space. And you just can't make it happen unless, you know, there's a producer involved of some sort. So it really depends on the project. But I think there's a place for both things, you know, and there's an audience for both types of projects.
What do you want to do long term? Are you wanting to make films? Or are you more to TV? What's your vision? If TV's around, I mean, let's just be honest, by the time our kids are grown.
I want to do a sitcom for a few years. That would be, you know, if I had my choice of futures, I would do a sitcom for a few years while continuing to do stuff on social media and then start making movies.
Okay.
Like,
so you're a comedy writer at heart.
I love to write comedy, but I don't know that I'm a comedy writer necessarily, but I just like to write and I like to make things that make people laugh or make people cry. I don't care. Yeah.
The writing process, do you have a kind of strict, I write every Friday afternoon at a local coffee shop type situation? No, you're not. No. What do you
do? No, I probably should. But that's sort of the process that we have going on the digital side of things when it comes to creating short form content. Like, we have a very regimented. Yeah, I have an internal team that I work with now.
How nice. That is so cool.
It's the best.
I'm so jealous.
It's the best. That also just happened in, you know, the last year or so. And it has streamlined the process a great deal. It's allowed me to feel a lot more accountable for everything that we're doing.
With writing and everything?
Everything. I mean, soup to nuts. Emails, writing, creation, organization, studio upkeep, whatever it is, like, we're all doing it together.
And did you get those people individually, or is that a whole team that just came?
No, it's always individual.
Okay.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah. It's all good. It started with an assistant and then sort of became, you know, it grew from there.
So when your writing process then is obviously affected because you have Paul over there helping you. So you and him come together and collab, or how does it work? Like, getting idea to paper to execution.
Paul? Who's Paul?
That's my Southern way of saying a human. I always say Paul. Whoa. Or Jill.
I was like, who is Paul?
Paul,
like, do I have a Paul that I don't even know about?
Everybody has a Paul.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. Wait, so ask me the question again. I was too busy trying to think of.
I'm curious, just the ideation process. I'm a weirdo, dude. I don't know if you read Elizabeth Gilbert, Big Magic. It's one of my favorite books. And she talks about kind of like ideas being like living entities. Like, they come over to you, they sit with you for a minute. And if Paul don't take action on them, they go on to somebody else. And so her idea is that you nurture ideas from capturing them to dealing with them and then putting them out into the world. And so I'm just curious, you're putting out a shit ton. You have big vision. You just freaking sold a movie. It's incredible. There's a lot passing through you, Adam. And I'm curious how you engineer that, I guess.
How I engineer it? I don't know that I engineer it. I'm trying to, you know, spin the plates as well as possible. And that does eventually require just more hands on deck. So I think it's really just been about figuring out what that looks like and finding people that can help you realize these things.
So an idea comes to you for a video or for a script.
Yeah.
Where do you put that idea?
I put things in my notes app.
Everybody tells me that.
I love my notes app. Okay. So yeah. So yellow pads, but mostly notes app because I'm usually somewhere where I'm not like in my office. Or
yeah. And then how do you know when an idea is ready?
Oh, I never know if an idea is ready. I mean, I don't know about ready, but I know an idea is good when I can't forget about it.
Okay.
Like that's how I know an idea is good.
All right. So you have these ideas that you think you keep thinking about. They won't let you go.
Yeah.
How fast do you normally take action on them? We can talk short form video first and maybe go to writing from there. Are you thinking of ideas and then putting them out the next week? Or is there a little bit? The reason I'm asking this to add context is I've been trying to find the line between being faithful with my craft and putting shit out there to get the shit out of you. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. To just make. But then also to wanting to make sure that I actually spend time with things and let them simmer. Because sometimes if you let something simmer, it turns into something else the following week. And so trying to figure out the balance between those, I've just been wrestling with it. And what do you think?
Yeah. So the process that we currently have right now, which ends up breaking down into like a weekly thing, seems to work really well for me, at least. On Mondays, today, we get together and we pitch. And by the way, this I totally stole from Zach King. Zach King invited me to his studio and I saw their whole process. And I was like, this seemed great to me. I want to do this. And so Mondays we pitch. At the end of that meeting, we figure out what we want to shoot that week. Tuesdays, pre-production, making sure that we have everything that we need for Wednesday. Wednesday we shoot and we'll shoot like however many videos, 5 or 6. And then Thursday and Friday are for brand deals and things like that. And what that does is it allows me a few days with everything. With those videos that we shoot on Wednesday, I edit them. I get to like sit on it for a day. I get to show it to a couple people. Hey, what do you think of this? Did this make you laugh? Like, whatever it is. And then refine before we post. So that seems to, and then you don't want to wait too long, right? If you wait too long, then it's sort of like, I think creative things require speed.
Tell me more. Why do creative things require speed? I like that.
Because of momentum. You need momentum. Like there is some, like, I feel like an idea is like a little snowball, right? Rolling down a hill. And if it's good, it'll start picking up speed and getting bigger and bigger, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you slow everything down all of a sudden, the idea stops growing. And, it's like a shark. It has to keep going. It has to keep swimming forward. If it doesn't keep swimming forward, it dies. Like, I'm not sure exactly why that is, but there is something about a creative thought that needs momentum in order to be realized.
Have you had a season, even a few weeks, couple months, where you're putting stuff out and you're looking at it and it's not working and you kind of found yourself in some kind of plateau or rut? And if so, how did you get out of it? If you just say that everything's been popping with you since day one, I'm out of here.
No, not at all. Yes, absolutely. I've had times of great concern for my future. And
even after the Blue Cardigan series?
Yes, because there was a moment where I thought, I just wasn't, I was feeling a little stagnated all of a sudden. And I thought maybe I had like painted myself into a corner. And I'm trying to figure out what sort of turned that around. But I think, honestly, Zach King, I really got to credit Zach King with like relighting my fire as a creator. Yeah. And I think sometimes it's important to remember that's how you can lean on people sometimes. Like, you don't even need anything from them. You just need to allow yourself to be inspired by other people.
I'm bad at that.
You got to do it, right? You have so much, so many other people have made mistakes for you already. So figuring out how to be open to learning from those things and observing what other people are doing and figuring out what your version of that is, that has helped me a great deal. And Zach King showed me that there are no limits to what this world in the digital space can do or can be. He's doing incredible things with his team there. There's like 20 people or something, you know what I mean? Like they have a whole operation going on there and they're doing incredible things. And I stopped feeling like I had sort of boxed myself in and all of a sudden felt more like I was standing on top of a box. You know what I mean? Like I had built this thing that I can now stand on and go, okay, now what do I want to do? And the world is my oyster. And that's when things really started picking up.
Dude, you have no idea how much I'm resonating with this. And to follow up and lean into it a little bit more, I'm curious your perception on creative restriction in the sense that, okay, I have like a very small following on Instagram, but I've gotten a little bit that I have by doing one kind of video. Yeah. I sit my ass in this chair and I tell stories of people like you, which by the way,
great.
I don't know if that's creepy when somebody pops up making a video about you, but I did.
No, so, I love it. I love that people are paying attention.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I've been doing that in the past 6 months, you know, that's where my followers have come from. But now, you know, I have a friend of mine who he's another creator and he's like, you got to do something different. It's getting boring. You're doing the same thing over and over again. And I kind of feel like this tension between, yes, you want to break out of the box and do something different and not pigeonhole yourself. But also when you've been putting out content for a long time and finally something's working, it's like, is that a sign? And do you need to lean into it a little more? And I'm asking the right dude here. So
yeah.
What is your perception with that, with challenging yourself creatively, but also too, not throwing away a signal from the universe? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. So we take the 80-20 approach, right?
Okay.
We're 80% leaning into the things that are working really well, and then 20% mixing in things that are experimental, that are new, that will take us to the next thing that will become the majority of what we do. That, I think, super important because it's easy to get comfortable, obviously. But to me, if what you're doing is working, you need to keep doing that. Like you want to, those people, that audience that you've grown as a result of that, you can't start making cooking videos all of a sudden because they're going to be like, wait a minute, I didn't come here for cooking videos. And I think there's a great deal of value in what you do. Look at Colin and Samir. They have become the just cornerstone of, you know, creator for creators,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And I think that is incredibly valuable. And then also, I think it's really important to continue to experiment with your content. But there's a way to do it that is still in your lane, in your zone. Yeah. And so that's something that we're always talking about. You know, we have this new format that we just shot last week that we're going to be releasing in a couple of weeks. And again, it's because, you know, my React videos kill, right? Mm-hmm. They just do so well.
There's a reason.
And it's great. Okay. Yeah. And thank you. And it's great. And we love that.
Yeah.
But as soon as, you know, we're hitting 150 million views on a video, my mind is going, okay, this ain't going to last forever.
Yeah.
What's the next iteration? What is the next thing? Let's keep doing this, obviously, and like squeeze the juice out of this React content. Great. Wonderful. I like making them. They're funny. They bring a lot of joy to people. I'm not going to stop doing that. But for that other 20%, what are we filling that with? How can we evolve the medium? How can we figure out what the next thing is? How do we experiment a little bit? And so we're always doing that.
And what do you do to gain those ideas? I don't know about you, man. Colin, Samir, all those people, I sit here and I just consume the hell out of personal development, creators.
Yeah.
I mean, that's my vein. But what I get stuck in is then my imagination is kind of limited to the, you know, content creator, self-help, entrepreneurial box. Mm-hmm. And I don't expose myself a lot, but here's the truth. When you start doing this, it's a lot of freaking work. You're busy. You have a family. Yeah. You have a kid. You know what I mean? So being very intentional, you're not 20 years old just screwing off. You can't go eat ramen on the side of the road for fun to be inspired. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
As a grown-ass adult who is very, this is a business that you have.
Absolutely.
How do you expose yourself to new stimulus, intentionally seek it out where you're not wasting time, you're actually getting re-inspired?
You use the key word, right? Intentional, right? If you are intentionally systematic about that stuff, you're like, okay, I need to expose myself to things that are not in my lane, that are, you know, creators that are outside. Okay, well then, you know, you got to set aside an hour out of your week to go find those people and consume that content. Anytime I have a thought like that now, I reach out to Emily, who's on my team, and she's like my right hand. And I'm like, hey, we need to do this. And we will find some time to do that. Even if it's just like, hey, we need to like get inspired by this stuff, or we need to watch some of this stuff, or we need to like have a conversation about XYZ, or like, what if we started making cooking content? Like that kind, you know what I mean? Like, I'm taking those thoughts that I have, and this is something else that has changed over the last year, is that instead of, you know, as we go through our day and we have these little thoughts like, hey, what if I did this? Like, maybe that would be, you know, beneficial, or maybe that would help, or maybe that would like, maybe people would really like that, or maybe I would really like that. Instead of just thinking those things and then like having them disappear, or trusting like, I'll remember that later. Now I'm like, cool, let me write that down. And let me put that thought into action of some sort. And over time, as you start doing that, you start to, you know, those little things that you're doing, those thoughts that you're having and then acting on them, it compounds over time, and you see a measurable difference in what you're doing and how those systems are affecting your output. And it all starts with what you said, intentionality. Right. So now we are incredibly intentional about how we spend our time, what we're talking about, and what we are putting out there. I used to just fly by the seat of my pants. I used to wake up in the morning and just go, all right, well, I see this trend is happening. Like, I'm like, scroll, what am I going to post today? Like this, maybe, or like, maybe I'll use this sound, or, you know, maybe I'll go through my little notes app and I've got some ideas on there. Maybe I'll do one of these things. That is akin to treading water. You know, you're just like trying to stay afloat. And when we became more intentional and systematic about our process, we're able to actually move forward.
Right. Are you building a media company? Because that's what it sounds like. Yeah.
Essentially. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Essentially, we haven't like put a label on it. Right now, it's just sort of centered on me. But there will come a time when it won't be that.
I can see that. I'm curious. The parallel, let me call it your media company, your personal media brand, between that and your writing projects.
Mm-hmm.
Again, full-time jobs, right?
Yeah.
So do you try to find parallels? Is there a way that one feeds the other, or are they totally separate in your mind? Like content-wise, you know what I mean? So here's a really silly example. So I do this show, and then I'm writing content now for Reels. So absolutely. You know, I'm getting ideas from you for the next Reels. Those cross-pollinate. Is there a way to do your stuff online? And does that work at all in your writing?
Yes. I think what I've learned about how to present an idea and pacing and things like that on the short form side, I think will end up carrying over to when we make our feature film. And it will feel different than other feature films as a result of that. Like, I think it's going to, just from a practical standpoint, you know, kick into high gear pretty quickly, probably. And there will be influences on that side of things, because I'm very familiar with retention now and how to keep people's, you know, focus. And those are just things that we're sensitive to now. So, and I think it's inevitably going to affect how the projects on the traditional side turn out.
Things I've learned in pacing. What do you mean by that?
I think a lot of creators that spend a lot of time in the short form space start to gain sort of a sixth sense for when their audience is getting bored. without having to post the video. Like I can watch a video and I can already feel when people are going to scroll. So, really? Oh yeah. You don't find that? You don't find that when you're watching a video, like, and maybe it's just because I'm obsessive about looking at those analytics, which is probably, you know, after you've, you know, kind of looked and become familiar with those analytics over and over again, you start to see a thread, you see a through line, and then all of a sudden it's like, okay, I can start to anticipate when that dip in retention is going to happen and, you know, preemptively adjust. So, okay, I feel like this cut, for instance, is taking a little long here, this little clip here, let's shave a few frames off of that, or let's shave a second off that, or whatever it is. And I think that that will inevitably, you know, be applied to any work in the traditional space that I do.
That has to be hard, though, when you have the mindset of short form retention and then thinking of carrying that into a script. Mark Manson, there was an interview I heard of him where he was talking about wrestling between short attention spans, whatever, and character development. Like, how do you really allow people to get to know character and the human when we're cutting things so short? Mm. You know what I mean? And I know that's different mediums, but do you find... Now, I'm guessing. I'm just putting words in your mouth, dude. But are you editing too much maybe in writing when you're doing long form content because you're used to short form?
Yeah, I mean, there's a balance, right? You can be influenced by your work in the digital space, but you then also have to remember that it's a different medium and people can't just scroll away from a TV show the same way they can scroll away from a vertical video. So you are allowed a little bit more room to breathe. You are allowed more time, but I think the principle is still the same, that time that people spend with you is earned, right? You have to tell people why they are going to stick around. And yes, you might have a little bit more cushion when it comes to the traditional space if you're making a TV show or you're making a movie, but the principle still applies. Like, are you keeping people engaged? Are they leaning in? Are you taking them moment to moment? Is one thing leading to the next? And do they care? Yeah.
I'm curious how you keep a gauge between your analytical mind and the business side to stuff and also fostering playful, childlike, kind of fun and staying tapped into why you love to create?
Yeah, that's a great question.
This is therapy for me, Adam, because like...
No, I know.
I'm asking you, I don't know the answer to, so I'm just trying to...
The truth is I really like the business side of things. I like numbers. I like seeing when things are working. I've always fancied myself a little bit of a businessman. I think any performer who is successful as a performer is part business person.
I can see,
you know,
that.
Yeah. Because it just, no matter how talented you are, you got to be good at marketing yourself.
Yeah.
You got to be good at reading a room, got to be good at networking to a certain degree. Like, there are parts of business that are inevitable when it comes to the entertainment industry. You know, it's show business. You know, I know people, that's like a trope, but like, it's a business and you want to be in show business. Like, you got to know both sides of it. So, yeah, that part has always, I think, come somewhat naturally to me.
You do a lot of collaborations, it seems like.
Yeah.
So is that something you seek out like actively, or is this just a repercussion of growing your audience and you just take them as they come?
Yeah, I've been lucky in that I've created some trends. So in the beginning, like when I first popped off with the Alternative Woe Challenge, everybody wanted to do that dance. So people, you know, creators that were much bigger than me were hitting me up like, hey, let's do that dance together. So I kind of cut my teeth in the collab world real early in my social media career and just understood the value moving forward. Now that we're, again, being way more intentional and we're not flying by the seat of our pants anymore when it comes to the content, we're kind of a couple weeks ahead now. The collabs have also become way more intentional. So like recently, we made a video with Bayashi, who's this really fantastic Japanese creator. I'm sure everybody watching probably has seen his videos, whether or not they know his name. He makes these really great cooking videos that also have like amazing pace and humor and all sorts of, and he also wears the same thing in all of his videos. He also doesn't talk very much. And so now we are starting to look at the elements of a creator and going, okay, does this really make sense? You know, does it make sense for me to make a video with this person where we can put out this video to both of our audiences and both of our audiences will go, great. Like, we understand this, we get it, we see the connection, and we love it, you know, and we are here for both of these people. And even creators that I really like, you know, it's not always the best fit when it comes to, you know, the kind of sharing audiences. You know, there are a lot of creators that I like that make kind of blue content, you know, and I'm a very family friendly creator for the most part. So it doesn't really vibe. So it doesn't really make sense for us to collaborate. So it really depends.
Which, thank you for that. I love the family-friendly stuff. I love comedy, and it's nice to have stuff that I can watch with my little girl. You know what I mean? So
I love getting those messages from like parents or grandmothers or grandparents being like, I love watching your videos with my kids or my grandkids. That's great.
Especially when these kids, you know, they're creators now. They're making CapCut videos all the time, and they're able to watch your stuff, and you're cool and you're funny, but you're also clean. But anyways, that's my mama bear coming out. I'm curious, just stepping back, looking over your career. Like I said, you've been making for a long time. What does it really take, in your opinion, to be a full-time creator? Like, real talk, honestly.
A lot of work. A lot of consistency, a lot of doing it when you don't feel like it, and then luck.
Preach.
You need all of those elements. Yes, of course, you need luck. With any business, especially show business, you need luck on your side, right? I've been incredibly fortunate. I've been incredibly lucky. But, you know, it's that old adage, you know, luck is a combination between preparation and opportunity. So you need to be prepared. You need to do all that hard work. You need to have the thing, you know, for the most practical example of that is when you go viral, you know, which takes a lot of luck, having that feed history of great content that makes sense with that viral video that people can go and watch. And then that's what's going to make them hit follow. It's not the viral video. It's everything before the viral video that didn't go viral. That's what they're going to want to see. And that's what's going to make them hit follow. And so that's the, you know, the preparation side. And then when you get lucky, you can capitalize on that luck because you put in the work. So
preaching, man. Yeah. I have a final question to ask all the guests, but before then, thank you. You didn't have to say yes to some random stranger Southern girl out in Georgia to spend an hour with. Thank you for your time today. This was incredible. Where do you want to direct our listeners to?
Oh, just hit me up on whatever platform you're on, Instagram, Snapchat, YouTube, TikTok, whatever you use, meet me there.
Love it. Very last question. What is something in your life in this season that you are deeply questioning right now that you don't have the answer to? It can be something small. It could be something big. But what's something you're deeply questioning right now?
How's it going to end?
Like the world?
Maybe. It's a Truman Show quote. I just love that quote. How's it going to end?
Well, I'm a little depressed now. We'll put some creepy music right here.
No. It's optimistic. It's like, how's it going to end? We have no idea. The world is our oyster, right? Anything's possible.
Isn't that interesting? The two twists. You had the positive one, and I'm over here being doom and gloom.
Yeah.
Anyways, Adam, thanks for your time today. This was awesome.
It's so nice talking to you, Heather.
Cool.